is the NJ2BS repeater. Use PL151.4. This is the NJ2BS repeater. Use PL151.4. NJ2BS repeat. This is the NJ2BS repeater. Use PL151.4.
W2TTT will start detecting it in a minute or two. W2TTT will start detecting it in a minute. Good evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2TTT. And this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR. Okay, that's the right answer. Good evening, everyone. This is, again, Gordon, W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. This net is conducted weekly on frequency 146.835. The 2-meter repeater and the Venture Crew 7373 Amateur Radio Club, located in Pearl River, New York. The club is headquartered out of Bergen Field. We're fortunate enough to have a repeater that largely has a coverage area in New Jersey, albeit a few hundred yards from New York. Alrighty, in any case, this net is a conversation. It's a conversation about amateur radio, about computers, electronics, telecommunications, the natural sciences that underlie our wonderful hobby. It's about what we do with our hobby, what we've done with our hobby, what we aspire to do with our hobby, and of course, the most valuable lessons, the things we never want to do again. It's also an opportunity to present items for sale, swap, or wanted, and you're encouraged to do that. We also would like you to check in to the net, even if you don't have something directly to contribute, because we would like to see some ideas to who's on the net, so that we can tailor the content and the conduct of the net to your needs. If you don't check in, we can't do that, and it puts us at a distinct disadvantage. It doesn't generate a whole lot of enthusiasm if you don't check in, so we hope that you will. So, with no further ado, one call at a time, and let me acknowledge each station before you chime in with the next one. Let's go to the Whiskies. Please call with your call sign, your name, indicate whether you have a question or comment for sales, swap, or wanted items, some combination of those things. Or, as I said, none of the above. Please call K2BAR.
Whiskey Alpha 2, India Sierra Echo, Bob, and brief comment.
Got you, Bob. Thank you very much. I got your comment noted. Who's next? Whiskey.
Whiskey 2, Juliet Echo, Kilo, Don, with a comment.
Good evening, Don. Got your comment. Who's next?
W2SE, no traffic.
Okie doke, I think that's Bruce. W2SE, got you. Whiskies, any other whiskies?
WI2W, no traffic.
Got you, Steve, welcome aboard. Any other whiskies? We got a carrier with no audio. Was that a whiskey that has no audio? Alrighty, let's go to the kilos.
K2AMI, Tony, with no traffic.
Okay, Tony, very good. K2AMI, got you. Any other kilos? Very good. Any other, let's see, any alphas?
Case
Sky, Rich, no questions, no comments.
Good evening, Rich. Welcome aboard. Got you and the other alphas. Okay, November station. Alrighty. How about anybody else, any call sign?
W2TK, Frank Montvale listening.
Okay, Frank, what are your intentions?
Just listening, Gordon.
Okie dokie, very good. Anybody else for the net? Alrighty, well, let's get right to it. W2JEK, K2BAR. Don, it's your ball. Okay, W2JEK, Don?
Yeah, K2BAR, W2JEK. Yeah, good evening, everybody. Barra's next VE test session will be on Friday, January 20th at 7 p.m. That'll be at the Senior Center next to the police station in the Township of Washington Borough Hall, 350 Hudson Avenue. If you're coming, the test fee is still $15, and you'll need an identification of one photo ID, like such as a driver's license or a passport or some other photo ID, or two non-photo IDs, and you need your social security number if you do not have a license, or if you have licensed equipment that's a commercial license, you will need the FRN number that you already have. Those people who have a ham license already do have an FRN number. If you have a ham license already, please bring it along with a copy of that license. If you wish to use a calculator, that's fine. The memory has to be empty. iPods, cell phones, and other devices may not be used as a calculator. So, as I said, this will start at 7 o'clock on Friday night, January 20th, at the Senior Center in Township of Washington. Back to net, W2JEK.
Very good, Don. That's helpful. Anybody have any questions for Don regarding the upcoming test sessions or licensing in general? Okay, very good. Don, do you want to add anything else?
Well, I usually ask W2JK. I have usual spiel about people who have the old technician license issued before March 21st, 1987. You can upgrade that doing what we call a paper upgrade, because the only difference between the technician license at that time was the code speed. Technician was at 5 words per minute, and the general was 13. So because the code has gone away, we can do a paper upgrade and get you a general class privileges. Also, if you know anybody that has a license that has expired beyond the 2-year grace period, they can re-up and get new license again. They have to take the current technician exam. But if they held a general, advanced, or extra class license, they get credit for that, having those licenses. Now, the general will get a general license. An advanced will also get a general license, because no new advanced licenses are being given. And an extra class person would get an extra class license back. You will not get the same call sign, but you will be licensed again. You will not have to take those general and extra class exams to get back into the swing of things, so to speak. Oh, sometimes I haven't run into that situation too much. I've had a couple of the technician license have come through my hands, but so far I haven't had anybody do that with the expired license and taking the technician test. Back to net, W2JK.
Okay, very good. Anybody have any follow-up questions for Don? Okay, Don, thank you very much. Okay, Bob, I've got several items of my own after you, so that's not going to be boring, at least I don't think so. So, Bob, you first, on the on your comment or question. I think it was a comment you said. So back to you.
NJ2BS, repeat.
K2BIRWA2ISE. No, nothing earth-shattering, but I've got another tunnel connection to a third server, so I'm getting a fair amount of connectivity by way of tunneling on the Arden network. Basically, that's all I had to comment about. Over.
Okay, very good. Is Randy's tunnel server still up?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, I think I saw it just earlier today. Over.
Okay, I'm gonna have to see. Is my I know my my question is my home server and my home or home node and my field node, are they both on the net right now?
I haven't seen it lately. I'll step over to the computer and see if you show up. I got a mesh status page up right now. Over.
Okay, very good. Yeah, because I know my field one was down, and I didn't have a chance to check to see if my home one was on. They're on different RF networks, depending on the tunnel for connectivity. He had had a problem just before he left, where he had to reduce the number of entities subscribing to his tunnel server because he had a he was basically running out of memory. We actually stress tested his home, his tunnel server to the point where it actually was convulsing and dropping and rebooting because of buffering issues. So I think he shed at least my field device. He may have shed my home device, I'm not sure. But if you could check that for me, I'd appreciate it. Because I will, if home is still up, then what I'll have to do is, perhaps reorient my field to the to somebody else. And if home is also shed, then I'll reorient both of them to different other nodes just for good measure. So that's good to know. But yeah, that was something that Randy had noted and was coping with Friday, Saturday.
Okay, Gordon, I just looked. Your call sign is not showing up anywhere, so I think everything of yours got shedded. Over.
Okay, that's fine. So what I'll do is I'll go and figure out. Mark, I think, is running a host, and I could run one, but I'm still not sure exactly how to set it up. And I have the no IP addressing stuff set up for it. I'm just not sure what values get plugged in where, so we need to kind of sort through that in a more calm time. But that's good to know. Anything else, Bob?
That's pretty much it. Way down on the list of importance is I put up a camera facing my backyard and the neighbor's yard. Yeah, big whoop. In addition to the camera that's looking out on Oradell Avenue. Anyway, that's about it.
Excellent. Okay. One of the things I did notice that we have someone in Elmwood Park who's willing to put up a node on 902.4. So we're going to work on that over the next couple of weeks and get that squared away. We just have to see which way we want to point each node, because the Garrett Mountain node might be good for them because of where they are. And we'll work on that, and then we'll also see if Fairlawn is a good reach. It looks like it might be. also possibly to K3GDX in Clifton. We're making some progress. And if Randy shed me for the Fairlawn node, that would be good. Did you see W2 November Tango from me in PT? November Papa Tango?
Gordon, I see a W2 on November Papa Tango. Over.
Well, that's great, because there's a bunch of nodes all connected together in Fairlawn. There's like four or five guys, including the club. So there's like a bunch of nodes there. So that's great stuff. All right, good. Well, I'm glad to be shed for that. So that works. That cluster is really good, but we might be able to bring them in via RF soon. This new node in Elmwood Park. So we'll see. Either that or we're going to get more traffic from that node. We'll see. Alrighty. So let's move on. Anybody have any other questions about this? About this mesh networking business in general? Alright, so we'll move on. Thank you, Bob. So today, the ARRL, if you go to the ARRL.org website, you'll observe that if you scroll down the main page a little bit, to the news items, the top right news item is one about drones and interference. What has happened is people are selling drone camera transmitters to the, what do you call it, on the 1 gig through 1.28 gig band, the last frequency in their selection being in the ham band, so we have a reason as amateur radio operators to protest this. But more importantly, we found that these systems also use channels that are used for aeronautical beacons, and they're wideband beacons, they're not narrowband, so they're 10 meg wide carriers on the beacons, and also some of the, the cameras themselves are pretty wide. So, with no hesitancy, the elite went out and bought some on the open internet, tested them, and then turned around and realized that at least one of them wasn't even stable enough frequency-wise to be reasonable. They did not check it for harmonics outside the bands and subharmonics, which is kind of a shame.
NJ2BS, repeat.
Okay, just make sure I didn't time it out. But anyway, so the upshot is here that that they have issued an urgent request to the FCC for immediate action, provided lab results and all sorts of other goodies. Mike Gruber from the League Electromagnetic Compatibility Lab did some significant testing, and let me tell you, it is very ugly. So hopefully it will get resolved in the not too distant future, but be aware that there's some really unholy things going on. And amateur radio, because our ox was being gored, was able to have standing and intervene on this one. But it doesn't always work that way. We've also seen, by the way, 2.4 gig, Wi-Fi band, but not Wi-Fi devices. Come on the bands as well with video streaming, and sometimes they're in excess of the 1 watt part 15 limit. So it's messy. So in any case, the article is very fascinating, and the hazards to aeronautical safety are abundant. So do keep that in mind, and you might want to take that article in.
W2JK.
Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, I read that article just a few minutes ago, matter of fact. And of course, aeronautical mobile, that's something you don't mess with. Some of these things are very important. So I think they ought to really get on that. Now, one thing I remember years ago, Space Shuttle Columbia had a 2-meter rig on it, and I was able to see the thing up in the sky there, about 250 miles or so up in the air, and receive what they were saying. It had a 2-meter radio, 5 watts output, and I was able to copy them with my rubber duck on my PH-21 Kenwood Handy Talkie at the time. And so these transmitters are running 6 watts, which is totally a violation of that Part 15 limit too. But you can see what they can do on with 5 watts on, say, 2 meters from the space shuttle. They can cover a lot of ground with that 6 watts. With I don't know what they have for an antenna, but still, it's should not be. Anyway, I hope the FCC does act on it. They've had a lot of problems with this stuff coming in from overseas that does not belong in our spectrum here. Back to that, W2JK.
Right, well, as you'll read in the attachment, there's a link at the bottom of the article to another document that's actually got the letter, the exhibits, the attachments, etc. Really nicely done. You'll see that one of the two devices couldn't be checked for spectral purity because it wasn't stable enough, which was very alarming. And then they didn't even bother ordering the amplifier. The amplifier is illegal on its face. So, we'll see what happens. These devices not being legal, it really is amazing as to just what they get away with in these things. They're available literally from hundreds of outlets on Amazon and eBay. Hundreds. This type of equipment. I don't know what it takes for the FCC to see this stuff. I mean, they must have the most, unaware staff or overwhelmed staff in the whole wide world. And I hate to say it, but I think it's unaware. I mean, for too many of the people, it's just a job. And, they don't have anybody trolling the internet looking at this stuff. And it would take a third-level bureaucrat, low-level bureaucrat, just go through and just write notices of apparent violation with no financial forfeitures at this point to hundreds of vendors and shut them down, or advise eBay and Amazon not to cut off these vendors. But for whatever reason, they don't. This is only one kind of emitter. I mean, you could have somebody doing that all day, and and just put a hold on their ability to use the postal system when they want to import things. It's real simple. Or grab the importer and say, "It's your website. You're responsible for it. We don't really care that it comes from China. You're selling it. You're responsible." Anyway, the inefficiencies of and unadaptability of government is just profound here in this case. I hope that changes over the next few years due to executive attention to the matter. But anyway, anyway. Anybody else? Alrighty. Well, that's the one I saw today that was really juicy. And, you know, we've had our share of things like that. The other thing is that the FCC has issued a notice to all cruise lines and, you know, ship operators that routinely dock here in the United States to make sure that when they're within the jurisdiction of the United States waters, that they have all systems that are not in compliance to the USA regulations turned off. And that would include things like decked phones, European-style decked phones, which show up on our cell bands. It would include things like Wi-Fi systems on Channel 14 and a variety of other systems that are worth note. So the ship, the cruise operators in particular, but also merchant ships are now on notice that from the FCC formally that they need to beware or break out their checkbook. I know we and other operators have particular troubles in obvious ports, New York being one, Miami being another, and plenty of others along our coast where this is a problem. Alrighty, anybody else?
NJ2BS, repeat.
W2JEK, just thinking of Steve Mandelson being a frequency coordinator for the New York Jets and having to find clear frequencies for the football players' radio frequencies so they weren't getting QRM by the hot dog vendors or the McDonald's or whatever the wireless microphone those people were using.
Yeah, well, they use a lot of different frequencies depending on what it is, but yeah, absolutely. It's quite the challenge, to say the least. But when you have non-compliant systems for the jurisdiction in question, i.e. in the United States, it's really a challenge. And you can't imagine the hell it breaks loose. It's quite the challenge. Alrighty. Anybody else on this one?
W2JEK. They could get a New York police helicopter to pick up one of these drones, signals. They could really complain to take the guy's drone and the guy and drone and throw them in the clink like they did with that guy that was in the bird with the police frequencies that we just read about recently on the internet there, on the ARRL's website.
No, that's right. Well, they had probable cause for other reasons and got the warrant and, you know, they brought the FCC in as a tag along for what else they suspected would be there, but the root charge for the probable cause, I think, was drugs or guns or both. I don't know what all I know is that Danny and his buddies are all sitting in the Otis cell these days. That's what I heard. They can stay there for all I care. You mentioned using a helicopter. One of the things that may be interesting, and think about this, when we have routine, you know, drone flights, whether it's for mail or for UPS or FedEx or Amazon, they're going to fly a certain pattern over an urban landscape or suburban landscape. It's going to be very specific, and it'll be very routine. It'll be, you know, daily, weekly, whatever. And imagine a 600 milliwatt drone, you know, coming over your neighborhood like clockwork every day on a particular channel and watching your Wi-Fi coverage be diminished because nothing's flying at, let's say, 100 or 200 feet above your house. It's line of sight. It's got, you know, this crazy, ballsy signal. And I think that you might see some periodic perturbations in your network as these things start to fly over routinely. It would be very interesting if you're, for instance, on a Wi-Fi call and all of a sudden you get bumped off of your own Wi-Fi by, you know, the drone that comes by for, you know, 40 seconds over your house or something. We will see what happens when that all rolls out. Anybody else have anything else? Alrighty. Well, if we don't have any more for this evening, then I encourage you to bring your friends to the net, invite more people to come, and bring topics. I know you guys are doing stuff. We had a great talk by Chris, W2CAM, which was a call at one time I considered getting, because I used to be WB2CAM. But anyway, that call sign is Chris's, and he gave a wonderful talk at the Barra meeting last Sunday on Arduino. And Steve, you brought a little toy of your own. You want to talk about Chris's presentation and maybe your own a little bit?
Well, I thought Chris did a spectacular job. If you looked around the room when he was speaking, nobody else uttered a word, which is very unusual for our crowd. He captivated the audience. I particularly liked his analogy or contrast with Heathkit and Arduino, and how the similarities between the Heathkit days of building and the Arduino days of building and the community and the help that you get are very similar. And I'm sitting here soldering up some stuff on the bench right now as I'm listening to the net, and it's a lot of fun. It's just amazing stuff. And if you haven't checked out the Adafruit website, you can spend a couple hours there just browsing and reading some of their tutorials. They sell a lot of this Arduino stuff along with other displays and batteries and connectors and circuit boards and transmitters and all kinds of stuff. So I second Chris's comments on Adafruit. I'm going to drop... Yeah, one of the things that Chris did was he built a keyer, and he was able to upload two different keyer programs into the same hardware and have it work. And I don't know, a lot of the guys didn't go take a look at what he had put together, but it just goes to show you what you can do with just browsing the web and gathering some code. One of the keyers that he used was by Goody, K3NG, and he's built an Arduino keyer that is as powerful as any other keyer that you've ever seen or heard, including a connection via USB to N1MM contesting software. So it fully integrates with N1MM. It's an amazing keyer, and it has so many different options you can configure. As Chris said in an email to me, it's a labor of love. The two projects I built was just one, a little weather station with just temperature and humidity. It took about maybe half an hour to an hour to assemble the parts and download the code and make a couple of modifications, because I used a different temperature sensor than they did. But that was a fun little project to do. I'm toying with the idea of making it more permanent with an indoor-outdoor thermometer and a nicer display for the shack. So when I speak to people... in Europe or elsewhere, I can give them their temperature in Celsius. And then the other ongoing project that I have that I want to have completed for Portable Day in a box is a knob to control a software-defined radio program, which Ted and I have been using to receive satellites. And the nice part about having a software-defined receiver on the satellite is you can see everybody in the passband. These are for the linear transponders, sideband and CW. And you can see the signals and then just click on them and work the guys. It's really nice for satellite work. So That's a little interface with an Arduino and some knobs that controls the software, so you don't have to use a mouse or a keyboard. It makes tuning easier. And that's what I've been doing with Arduinos, and I'm messing around. I got a little GPS module and a little display, and I'm going to try to make a GPS clock. That's the next little project. With that, back to Ned, K2BAR, WI2W.
Yeah, you know, Mark, N2MH is in the process. I don't know if what he used, I don't know if it was an Arduino or a Pi or something else, but he made a reference standard. He bought himself a signal, a cesium source, I think he bought, and he successfully made a couple of clocks for the internet for really high accuracy stuff. It was amazing, nicely done. So very good. I'm curious about your Arduino. Basically is a knob driver to have one for tuning and two other knobs, which were also optical choppers, for the upper and lower side of the passband. Did I get that right?
Well, let's see. First of all, they weren't optical choppers. They're physical encoders with switches, which have switch mounts, and that created a learning opportunity to find out how to really do it properly. It turns out you use a state diagram to detect when your encoder changes state, and it eliminates the bounce completely. And that's the short story. It took me a long time of playing with some RC circuits and some playing around with some code, and then I found an encoder library, and that simplified things. So far as the controls on the box, there's a volume knob with a mute button, a main tuning knob that you can push and has a push button switch attached, and you can push the button and it'll change the tuning rate, slow, medium, and fast. Then there's two knobs for high cut and low cut on the filter, and I'm not sure, but it was acting a little differently on this different computer I had, and it was acting like a variable band pass with one knob actually just widening the filter in, on both sides. So that's going to require a little more investigation. I took an old DeBarra computer and threw the software on it to bring in, and it behaved a little bit differently with the Windows XP. Not quite sure what was going on, but I'll sort that out. It's just a little code. And then there were two push buttons for mode up and mode down, so that you can switch between the various modes. I don't know how useful that'll be. There's an awful lot of modes in that software. I don't know how many button presses it'll take to get from CW to sideband to FM. So we will see. Fun stuff. Back to Ned.
Well, you know what you could do? You could put the modes you use mostly, cluster them together. Since you have an up-down button for mode, you won't have to go too far for at least the modes that you're most likely to use. You can leave the other modes on the periphery of the central group, perhaps. You can also make it circular, perhaps, and therefore it matters less as long as you cluster the ones you like or most likely to use together. Yeah, the proverbial AM, FM, sideband, or upper and lower sideband, that might be the easiest way to go. So that's very good. What SDR receiver do you use what software are you using, and what radio head?
Well, first, to comment on the modes, it's just a mode up and mode down. We're not actually setting the modes. It's just cycling through them, so we have to use the same order that's already built into the software. There's no way to change that I'm aware of. And the software is called SDR Console. It's by Simon Brown of Ham Radio Deluxe fame. He's working very hard. He has a new version, version 3, which is looking very nice, much cleaner. And so that's the software. And the interface to his software for external control is via a MIDI interface. That's the Musical Instrument Digital Interface, MIDI. So I had to reprogram one of the chips on the Arduino to make it look like a MIDI device. And so that was a lot of fun. And then the receiver we're using is a FunCube Dongle Pro Plus, which is, I think, the fourth revision of the AMSAT UK's FunCube Dongle. It's a very high-performance software-defined radio, and it has SAW filters for 2 meters and 440, so it lets you operate satellites without any cross-band interference, which is very nice. It played very well on field day last year. WI2W.
Yeah, okay, so I've been playing with SDR console the last couple of days, along with SDR Uno, and of course the other one, HDSDR, and they're all pretty cool. I must say they all have their pluses and minuses, but I can see why you like SDR console. It's you know, Mr. Brown's done some nice work. I will say SDR Uno and SDR console, in addition to being, you know, fully functional receivers packages, they also are, they're also pretty straightforward to use. The HDSDR was a little more complicated, and I got it working, and so I can flip among the three of them, and very pleased with how they all work with my SDR Play. I have an RSP2, which is the one with the bandpass filters and the like. So it's good to 2 gigs, 1 kilohertz to 2 gigs. And got 3 different antenna inputs, and one of the receiver inputs is a the standard, if you will, HF through whatever, SMA connector. Second one is another one, the B port's the second one, but has a built-in T injector, a power T built-in, so that it'll run 4.7 volts up the coax to whatever your antenna is, so that you can power a preamp up top side, or even potentially a steerable array if you had a way to talk to it. And then the last element is a balanced line input, and that's good down for the lower frequencies, below HF, and up to, 30 or so megs. And it's great. I've been messing with it and very pleased. So all these little SDRs are pretty cool. Now, is the FunCube a 8, 12, or 16-bit processor?
I don't know, but let me Google that for you.
Yeah, SDR Plays are 12, and I actually haven't checked even to compare that to, my Flex 1500 or my Flex 5000. Should probably check that, but I'll give you a hint. It works better than my little RF Explorer. Though the RF Explorer goes to 2.7 gigs. This, for what it is a much better receiver head than the RF Explorer was. So, no complaints on my part.
So, on their website, it says, internally, the ADC depth used is 32 bits. Initial firmware will provide access to 16 bits of ADC resolution. And it also says that there are 11 discrete hardware filters to the front end, including narrow SAW filters on amateur 2 and 70 centimeter bands.
Yeah, what's the high frequency on that, and the low frequency for that matter?
Receiver range is 150 kilohertz to 240 megahertz, 420 to 1.9. And it says in our first 20 units, all have covered 150 to 260 and 410 to 2.05. And the sample rate is 192 kilohertz.
Interesting. So what's the reason for the exclusion in the middle?
Don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of military stuff in there, radio location stuff, so, you know, aviation. So that's kind of interesting. Okay. I'm just curious more than anything. Yeah, I'm going to have to look up what mine's about. But overall, very pleased with it, and no complaints. One thought is to take one port, the port A, and use it for to plug into the IF of your favorite legacy radio, and then that way you'll get a you'll get as much bandpass as you would like. If it has a roofing filter, you'll get a little less, or you get a little of attenuation, beyond a central, let's say, generally 30 kilohertz or so. But the second port could be used for a direct antenna connection, and the third port could be used for a direct antenna connection, but on HF and low frequencies. I'm thinking of even using it with a with a trans like a 1 watt loafer transmitter. I think it would have the right receiver chops to do what it needs to do there. At the same time, go nicely with a one or two transistor VW or even small balanced mixer transmitter with a filter. So we'll see. We'll see what you have. They're pretty fascinating. All these SDRs. I do know one thing that the SDR Play does so much better than a DVB-T. The DVB-T is pretty impressive in its own right. Good stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and technology marches on.
Yeah, what's interesting about all of this stuff is that a lot of the same software works with a lot of different radio heads. So what you can do is you can take these things, and if you have your custom hardware, like your little tuner box that you're talking about, control box you're talking about that's Arduino based, and you have the FunCube and a PC or a tablet or whatever else you're going to use, you can change out the radio head, or you can move it from a Windows machine to a Linux box to an Android box to a Mac, because a lot of these software packages are available for each and every one of these platforms. So it really is kind of exciting in that regard. There's a lot of, I would say, plug and play swapperoony things that you can do with both the radio heads and also the software platform you're using to drive it, which is very exciting, because you can match the environment to your needs.
Well, we're going to try to have the system up and running in test mode for a portable day as a shakedown for a field day. So that's the plan. Anyway, that's about it from here. I think I'm going to pull a switch and head upstairs. So 7-3 to all. And thanks for running the net, Gordon. K2BAR, WI2W.
Well, thank you, Steve, for that overview. And look forward to your tuner box. It should be exciting. Your intention is to run that with a Windows machine?
Yes, that's correct. That software runs on a Windows machine. So it'll actually be on a Mac disguised as a Windows box.
Okay. I'm just curious, can you, will you have the option of running that software? I think that software is available for platforms other than Windows, isn't it?
I don't think so. SDR console only runs on Windows as far as I know.
Okay. All right. So, because I know HDSDR is available on a variety of platforms. And what is SDR? Pardon me, SDR Uno is as well, but I'll have to go back and look. But in any case, there's always choices. And the worst case is if SDR Uno is not available, you want to run it on a Linux machine or you want to run it on it's an Android platform or something like that. You could simply just turn around and get the other program going and just convert the command set from, as you put it, the MIDI interface to whatever else makes sense. It really is kind of neat. Not much more than a small library change. Alrighty. Alright, anybody else have any questions or comments? Well, as they get ready for period two, Devils and Edmonton. Devils are up 1-0. Alrighty. I want to thank everyone for participating tonight. And I remorsefully have to set back the really super RF head to Tektronix. They need it back. I'm going to put it into UPS tomorrow morning. We're shedding a tear as I go, but it has got to be done. Anyway, love to get one of these babies. An RSA-507A. RSA-507A. Take a look at it from Tektronix. Especially with the tracking generator, you can do all sorts of neat things like sweep lines and antennas and do all sorts of things, TDR functions. And it's got a GPS module built in so you can geolocate interference and orientation of your antenna when you were doing it. All sorts of fun stuff. All right, so 7-3, everybody. That's my next task, is to package it up. So 7-3, and have a good one. This is K2BAR thanking everyone for a beautiful evening and hope everybody enjoyed this warm day. It's going to have a little bit of yuck over the weekend, but it'll all be fine. 73 and have a good one. This is K2BAR, W2TTT, returning the repeater to normal amateur radio use.
NJ2BS, repeat. This is the NJ2BS repeater. Use PL151.4. This is the NJ2BS repeater. Use PL151.4. This is the NJ2BS repeater. Use PL151.4. NJ2BS, repeat. This is the NJ2BS repeater. Use PL151.4. This is the NJ2BS repeater. Use PL151.4. This is the NJ2BS repeater. Use PL151.4. NJ2BS, repeat.